For good health and good flavor, say to your dealer,
a dozen Sunkissed Lemon, please.
Heather Hopper's Hollywood. Miss Hopper is just going on the air. Will you listen, please? Heather Hopper's Hollywood. Miss Hopper is just going on the air. Please listen.
Heather Hopper's Hollywood.
Yes, it's Heather Hopper's Hollywood, told you by Hollywood's favorite columnist, charming Heather Hopper, and brought to you this week from New York by the growers of sun-kissed oranges and sun-kissed lemons. And speaking of lemons, have you ever eaten baked potatoes without salt? Pretty dull, wasn't it? What does that to do with lemons? Just this. What salt does for potatoes, lemon juice does for lots of other vegetables. Spinach, asparagus, broccoli, beets, green beans, and the like. Lemon brings out the flavor, gives vegetables an appetizing taste you may not know you're missing, any more than you'd know what salt does for potatoes if you'd never tried it. Lemon juice gives vegetables something extra in the way of vitamins, too. And a lemon garnish adds a dash of color many vegetables need. Bring out the flavor and add health with sun-kissed lemons. Now, here's Hedda Hopper with today's news in Hollywood and New York from New York.
Thank you, John King, and hello, everybody. Joan Crawford has been ordered to the coast next Tuesday, but she's hoping to remain here throughout the holidays. I wish you could have seen her shopping yesterday at Macy's. She was surrounded by four policemen and followed by a crowd of 300, and no wonder she stopped traffic. She was wearing a hat faced with silver fox, and on that, a red rose and a bunch of violets. It sounds pretty quaint, but it was really very becoming. Mary Healy and Peter Lynn Hayes will be married Christmas Day. Raymond Navarro collided head-on in an automobile accident yesterday in Hollywood. He has a brain concussion and chest injury. Marlene Dietrich's new leading man for The Flame of New Orleans will be George Brent. Kathleen will be Shirley Temple's first picture at Metro. I guess Alice Faye is tired. She refused to attend those enormous studio luncheons given for visiting big shots. Maybe she's just tired of chicken. Lou Fields of the famous team of Weber and Fields became a grandfather this morning when his daughter Dorothy, the famous songwriter, became the mother of a son. Lorraine Day is certainly getting on. She'll remake Trial of Mary Dugan, which starred Norma Shearer 11 years ago. Harper Marx tells of the male moviegoer who asked the lady in front of him to remove her hat. He got a dirty look and, after one reel, tapped the irate woman on the shoulder and said, "You can put your hat back on now. The picture wasn't worth it." When Vincent Astor came home early yesterday, he found his bride washing out her stockings and exclaimed, "What on earth are you doing?" "Well, I'm just doing what I've always have done," she said, and went right on washing. Roz Russell, who was late for an appointment to accept the National Speech Teachers Award, heard the clang of a fire engine, looked out her window, and found her kitchen was on fire. Walter Pidgeon arrives in Washington, D.C. for the opening of his latest picture, Flight Command, the preview of which will be seen by correspondents while flying through the air. Claire Trevor, who's rehearsing the play Out West, It's Different, which opens here soon, is so happy to get away from those hard-bitten parts the movie moguls have been giving her that she would have been willing to play Little Eva. Well, if the New York critics treat that play as they have the other four with a Hollywood background, she'll be just as happy to fly back home. I'm always amused at the critics' contention that they have an open mind about anything that comes from Hollywood. They certainly haven't proven that this year, because nothing laid in Hollywood has escaped their attack. And I maintain that Lee Tracy's latest Every Man for Himself, which lasted only 3 nights, might have been nursed into a hit had they said, "Gilbert Miller presents." If the critics continue being so amusingly devastating, they might find themselves without any job, because at the present rate of plays, well, there aren't enough openings to keep them busy. If they want an understudy for Victor Mature, they can find him in that trio at the Astor. Besides his good looks, he plays an accordion. In my peregrinations here, I find more talent in nightclubs than in the theaters. That dancing couple at the Martinique is certainly photogenic. Properly cast and photographed, he could be another Valentino. Ed Davis of Leon and Eddie's told me of his movie experiences. They brought him to Hollywood for one picture. Producer met him at the airport at 6 a.m., told him to be at the studio at 9. But it was 48 hours before he could get through the gates. The producer had forgotten to leave word about him. George M. Cohan had practically the same experience. That's one reason he won't do any more pictures. The funniest show in town is Jack White and his gang at Club 18, deflating the ego of visiting out-of-towners. Jack has a wit comparable to Fred Allen's and just as quick. Our visiting stars used to make that their hangout, but have discovered the fun is too fast and furious for them. Last night, Jack celebrated my 105th birthday, and when he saw my red dress, said, "Oh, I see you're ready for that blood transfusion." Now that Jack Benny and Mary Livingston are here, I suppose the rumors will again be flying thick and fast about their separation, because Mary remains for Sunday's broadcast, then skips to California and won't be here for next Sunday's. I believe the reason these separations are predicted is because columnists have been fooled so often by couples like Myrna Loy and Arthur Hornblow, who deny there's any trouble and then in a few weeks announce their divorce. So those who live by scoops and scoops alone can't afford to take any chance, and slyly hint that such and such a star and his mate will make headlines soon, so that if anything does happen, they can refer to their column of such and such a date and say, "See, I told you so, and I told you so first." I don't believe Orson Welles will play in the picture How to Meet a Man, which I'm going back to Hollywood to do. Now, if they wrote a story on How to Meet a Man from Mars and he could scare our citizens again, well, that would be a different story. One of the nicest things about visiting New York is the response and friendship of my former co-worker, Hi Gardner, who gave me a wonderful dinner at the Astor last night. There was the genial Bob Christenberry, who for the past 5 years has been host at the Astor. He's about to bring out a book covering some wonderful memories of famous people who have lived there. Will Rogers, General Pershing, Thomas A. Edison, Ramsay MacDonald. I think one of the most amusing stories he told me concerned Charles Evans Hughes, our Chief Justice, who made that his headquarters during his presidential campaign of 1916. When he went to bed election night, he was President of the United States. But when he woke up, he found that California had thwarted his ambition and he was just a private citizen. Will Rogers started the day's work at the newsstand, and he'd call for the papers and say, "Well, there's my material for tomorrow." Irvin S. Cobb, George M. Cohen, Irving Berlin always sit at the same table and never order, because Captain Nick knows exactly what they like and does it for them. There's a homey feeling about the place which comes not from bricks and mortar, but from the genial personality of Bob, who rules over its destiny. Gene Autry is making the big cities not through his pictures, but his records. His latest, The Broomstick Buckaroo, is selling like hotcakes. Metropolitan tenor Melchior has had a secret yearning to play the kind of character roles that Emil Jannings used to do, and he's making a test. That blonde Romeo, Sterling Hayden, who was discovered in Virginia and played his first part in the picture of the same name, had his option lifted by Paramount, and they're grooming him for stardom. Did you know that Dick Barthelmess has been given an honorary high rank in the Navy to help recruiting on the West Coast? And no one is prouder of that uniform. Old Papa Time has rolled around again to Friday the 13th. No matter how much we deny it, there's scarcely one of us who doesn't have some sort of superstition. I won't stay in a room with a hat on the bed. Judy Garland won't sing if there's a yellow gold cornet in the band. Hedy Lamarr wouldn't work today. Orson Welles forbids whistling in his dressing room, as do thousands of other actors. There's a rumor that Joe Kennedy will be the new head of RKO. George Schaefer, the present head, says it's not true. And now here's a special invitation for some of you.
Yes, an invitation to see sun-kissed oranges grown, picked, graded, packed, and shipped. Of course, that's if you visit Southern California. But thousands do every year, including many of our listeners.
You can't help being thrilled by the acres of beautiful orange trees growing in fertile valleys watered by mountain snows. Rich, naturally colored, sun-ripened oranges being picked by skilled workmen wearing gloves to protect the fruit.
You'll see these oranges, carloads of them, being machine-washed and sorted for size, individually inspected, even x-rayed when fine quality is in doubt. And then the very best, only the best, are stamped sun-kissed, wrapped in tissue, packed in sturdy boxes, and rushed to your hometown.
You couldn't select better oranges if you had every grove to choose from. Sun-kissed navel oranges, best for juice and every use.
Time now for the concluding episode in the life story of Dorothy L'Amour, star of Moon Over Burma, which opens this week in many cities throughout the nation.
It was Dima Harshbarger, then head of the NBC Artist Bureau in Hollywood, who persuaded Dottie to come west. Universal, who made a test of Dottie, liked her and offered Dima, her agent, a contract. But Dima turned this down. It wasn't good enough to suit her. Then, in order that Dottie's mother might have an emergency operation, Dima, the same afternoon, managed to sell Dottie to a recording studio and got an advance of $500 she needed so badly. When Dottie returned home that evening...
Hello, Doctor. How's Mother?
Well, good evening, Miss L'Amour. Your mother's about the same.
Doctor, I got the money. I'm going to make a series of phonograph records, and they advanced me $500. That'll take care of the hospital expenses, but I don't know what I'm going to do about you.
No, we won't think about me right now. You'd better go in and talk to your mother while I call an ambulance.
All right.
Is that you, Dorothy?
Yes, Mother. Are you all right?
I'll be all right.
Tell me, what happened at the studio? Did you get your contract? Oh, Why, yes, Mother. Everything is fine.
No, it isn't. You're just saying that.
No, really, darling. Look, here's my first advance, a check for $500. Oh, Mother, you're going to be well again. We're going to take you to the hospital right away.
Dottie felt her world tumbling about her as she paced the corridors of that hospital. All the hardships they'd gone through together were as nothing compared to the uncertainty of this moment. Then, finally, the door of the operating room opened.
Doctor, tell me, how is she?
Things look very good.
Then she's going to be all right? She's going to get well?
Well, she'll have to stay in bed for a good many weeks, but one of these days she'll be good as new again.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Now, look, young lady, you better go home now and get some sleep.
Then came several very gloomy weeks. Apart from the wreckage, she seemed to be making no headway whatever. Meanwhile, Dima had worked up considerable interest in her at Paramount. Finally, Dolly made a test for them. This time, she was made up as the lead in a picture called The Jungle Princess.
Well, Lloyd, what do you think?
I like her. She might go places.
In your picture?
What do you mean, in my picture?
Well, now, after all, Lloyd, I didn't bring you in this projection room to take you out of the hot sun. You haven't cast your feminine lead yet, have you?
No, but I can't use this girl.
Why can't you?
I must have a name for that part. Too big for an unknown.
You will agree, though, won't you, Lloyd, that Dorothy L'Amour looks the part, that if she was known, you'd use her?
Yes, of course.
Now, that's all I want to know. I've been talking to the publicity department. They've got some ideas on making her famous before you release the picture. Will you talk to them?
Yes, but I don't think it will work.
I know, Mr. Sheldon, you want a name player for the part, but here's a girl who's actually made for it. Why, she's a jungle princess if I ever saw one.
But she's a nobody.
Yeah, now, yes, sure. But she won't be by the time the picture's released. Why, we'll plaster the magazines and newspapers with her picture. Not in a bathing suit, but a sarong. Why, with her figure and that long black hair, say she'll be better known than the president. Mr. Sheldon, she's a natural for publicity.
The sales talk worked, and it usually does. Dottie got the part, and then came opening night.
How do I look, Mother?
Turn around.
Oh, beautiful. Simply beautiful. Oh, darling, I wish you were well enough to be with me tonight. Do you realize, Mother, this is something we've dreamed together all these years?
Yes, dear. And tonight it's coming true. I'll be listening at the radio.
Oh, I wish you could be with me tonight.
I'll be with you, dear.
Of course you will. Kiss? Goodbye. I'll be home early.
Goodbye, darling.
We're bringing these famous personalities to you as fast as we can.
Oh, here she comes now through the crowd. The jungle princess herself, Miss Dorothy L'Amour. How do you do, Miss L'Amour?
Good evening.
How about a few words to the radio audience, Miss L'Amour? Are you excited and thrilled?
Thrilled, I'm speechless. I don't quite know what to say. It's the most important moment in my life.
Ladies and gentlemen, I must tell you, Miss L'Amour has one of the most wonderful mothers in the world, haven't you, Dorothy?
You bet I have.
And I suppose, of course, she's here with you tonight.
Yes, indeed, she is here. We wouldn't miss this for anything in the world.
Would we, Mother?
And so ends our story on Dorothy L'Amour. The part of Dottie was played by Jeanette Nolan. Next week, we'll present the life story of Charles Boyer. And here's John King with a whizzing idea for Christmas.
Yes, a whizzing gift for you to give to a friend or to yourself. It's the Sun-Kissed Juices, with features found in no other electric juice extractor for the home. It's good-looking, small, and has exactly the right power for the purpose. Getting more juice from oranges and lemons in less time and with less effort. Most of all, you'll appreciate the automatic vibrating strainer that cuts up the juice cells and speeds up the work. This deluxe model, chromium-plated Sun-Kissed Juicet, sells for only $9.95 in the United States. The standard model, the stationary strainer, is only $6.95. See the Sun-Kissed Juicet at your department store or electrical shop. If not in stock, order from Sun-Kissed, Los Angeles, California. Now, Miss Hopper, have you a last word?
No, except to thank my friends and fans for giving me the most exciting 2 weeks I've ever had in New York City. And after doing a guest spot with Dulcie Chase on Luncheon at the Waldorf, I plane out tomorrow, where I'll greet you Monday from Hollywood. And so this is your Sun-Kissed correspondent, Heather Hopper, saying good afternoon to some of you, good evening to more of you, and good luck to all of you.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.